Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, the vapor is rising from the coffee cup. The soldering iron is heating up. And it's time for Solder Smoke 95. It's November 23rd, 2008. And sort of live from Rome, this is Solder Smoke. Sorry for the delay. I got caught up in a variety of things here, and you know how it is. One thing leads to another, and the next thing you know, you're a week late with Solder Smoke. But happy to be back, and the mailbox is full, and we've got a lot of things to talk about, so off we go. One of the things that's kept me away from the microphone here has been, and I'm sure many of you will be happy to hear this, has been a for real home brewing QRP electronic project. Mike used to occasionally criticize me, saying that we were spending so much time on Solder Smoke that we weren't actually generating anything. So anytime I find myself over at the workbench with Solder Smoke being emitted, I think that I'm heeding Mike's advice and back on the right track. And plus, it gives us something to talk about once we do fire this thing up. And let me just go over to my computer screen here. Audacity continues to run, but I'm also got fired up my LT Spice simulation of the amplifier chain that I've been working on. This is a has been a really fun project. I have the a kind of a crude version of the schematic and the LT Spice model posted on the SolderSmoke. SolderSmoke.blogspot.com blog page. So those of you who wish to follow along via the web or even via the by the miracle of LT Spice, you can do so, or you can take a look at it later. I'll tell you what I've been working on. It's just an amplifier chain, linear amplifier, solid state, of course. And the objective is to get around 45 dB gain, and the purpose of this amplifier is to serve as the linear amplifier chain for an 80 meter double sideband transmitter, soon to be transceiver, that I started to build in London. You may recall I talked about this thing. I call it my kick panel rig because the chassis, well, the base of the chassis is literally a breadboard purchased at a Dias store, and probably in Windsor in the UK. I think that's where we got it. And then I needed something for the actual cabinet. And at the hardware store on Fulham Road, in on the border between South Kensington and Chelsea, near Fulham Bridge, I've been away for a while. Near the Chelsea football stadium, you guys know what I'm talking about. I found a piece of aluminum that was intended to be the kick panel for the for a door. You know, the restaurants and public places put these panels on the door so that people, when they kick the door in with their foot, they don't wear the door away. And I just wrapped this piece of aluminum around the breadboard, and that became the chassis and the cabinet for what was intended to be originally, I think, a 40 meter double sideband transmitter. I got the double sideband transmitter going in London, and did make some contacts with it, but I was never really quite satisfied. This was this construction project was definitely kind of in the dark days of bad method construction, just hacking and throwing circuits together in a kind of barbarous way. This was before I was really enlightened by the experimental methods of EMRFD. And so this was a rig that, like many of the rigs I have in the shack here, that was in need of reform. It was in need of some rational design, and so I decided to use what was useful, what remained in this rig. But then, especially because of all the problems I've had with amplifier design, decided to kind of start from scratch on the amplifier chain. And I also decided not just to try to not just copy circuits from QST or from EMRFD or SSDRA. I just sort of wanted to start with a blank page and see if I knew or remembered enough about amplifier design to design my own little chain of amplifiers and see if I could get them to work. Get them to work without all of the agony that I've had with with amplifiers. You longtime Solder Smoke listeners will have heard our discussions here about the trials and tribulations of getting amplifiers to amplify, getting them to amplify on the right frequency or just one frequency at a time, or not to be oscillators and all that stuff. And there's been all kinds of stuff written, and we've spent a lot of time talking about this. I was thinking that it just didn't have to be this hard. It can't be that everybody has all these problems, and I'm happy to report that it doesn't have to be that way. This project went together very nicely, and I've got it percolating along quite well. The way I do it, it does start out with just a blank piece of paper and a pencil and start, the first amplifier and start doing some calculations. But then I kind of quickly move to LT Spice, a program that I've really come to like. And at the same time, I used one of the programs in the that comes with experimental methods for RF design. This is Wes's FBA program, the feedback amplifier program. I decided to put feedback in all four stages of this amplifier chain because one of the phrases that Doug DeMaw used quite a bit in his writing when he was writing about amplifiers was that when you use feedback techniques or feedback amplifier design, he'd always say, quote, "unconditional stability is guaranteed." Wow. After all I've been through with solid-state amplifiers, that is a really alluring statement. I mean, you got me there, Doug. Unconditional stability is guaranteed. And there should have been maybe a footnote. Even if Bill Mara is the guy who's building the amplifier. Anyway, so I took Doug's promise and used feedback, both degenerative and shunt feedback, in all four stages. And I also decided to heed the advice of Wes, W7ZOI, and others who said that you really, to do this, you have to measure. You can't just kind of wing it and think, well, I think that's about how much gain I'm having here, and I think that's about what the input level is, and all that kind of flaky, hand-waving stuff that I was doing before. So now it became a matter of measuring. And I had, from the old kickback rig, I had a balanced modulator circuit, pretty standard balanced modulator circuit, a singly balanced modulator with two diodes, and the standard tri-filler toroid transformer. And I had a little 741 op amp audio amplifier going into it, and I had the oscillator, the RF oscillator that I modified so it would work on the 80 meter band, which is my target band for this project. I measured the output of the balanced modulator, and I watched it on the scope, And I could tell that I could get a clean double sideband signal out of this arrangement, but with an output of 0.0001 watt. So that's 0.1 milliwatt. And so that became my my kind of target or my design input power level, which I think, by the way, is actually a pretty good one to use, because I think that's also about what you can expect out of an NE602 balanced modulator or doubly balanced mixer. So anyway, that was where I started, and then I figured I would design for about 10 or 12 dBs or so of gain for each stage, and with four stages, I should get up to the desired 45 dB gain, which would put me at about 3.5 watts or so. So off we went, and the first two stages were 2N2222s. Oh, I wanted to mention also that there's many elements that came into this project. Some from the a lot of them from the past. Some software, some hardware, some in the category of literature, some in the category of email. And one of the things that I did on this thing was at one point I printed out emails that Mike and I had exchanged with Wes 2 years ago on this project, on a similar kind of project, on the project of design for phone rigs. And I printed out a whole bunch of them and stuffed them in my my backpack. And at lunchtime, up on the Via Veneto in Rome, while everybody else was sitting around reading Corriere della Sera and La Repubblica and other Italian newspapers, there I was looking, not very fashionable, reading emails about feedback amplifier design. So anyway, it wasn't, in Italy, if you do something that's kind of out of it, not something that's not really seen as a cool thing to do, they say it's a brutta figura. And I don't think this was brutta figura. It was different. And it was una cosa bella. Anyway, it was okay. I was sitting there reading about RF amplifier design on the Via Veneto in Rome. I was not, as people would suspect, drinking a Campari and soda. It was just a regular coffee there. Okay, so these were all the ingredients that went into it. And the two, I posted the design up on the website, and I think later today I'll post an updated design with more information. If you guys could take a look at it, I'd like some feedback on my feedback amps. Let me know what you think about the design, if I'm doing anything wrong. If you have any suggestions, please sharpshoot it and let me know where I've gone wrong or what I could have done better. Like I said, the two popcorn amp stages there, real simple. I got them both set up. The first two stages have a kind of a quiescent current of 33 milliamps. For the feedback resistor in the emitter is 15 ohms, and the shunt feedback resistor is 470. This is where the program FBA, the feedback amp program, becomes very useful, because instead of having to do some really, really long calculations to determine the input impedance that crops up when you use different values of feedback resistance, the FBA program allows you just to plug these values in, and it tells you right away what your input impedance looks like. And that helped quite a bit. So I was shooting for 50 ohm input impedance throughout. I used real simple toroidal transformers using, let's see what material I used here, FT50-61 ferrite. And The first two stages I used, 2-to-1 turns ratio to get a 4-to-1 impedance transformation. And so that took the 50 ohms from the following stage and made it look like 200 ohms for the amplifier stage that you're working on. Things got kind of interesting when I got to the driver stage. I started out using a 1-to-1 transformer, thinking that 50 ohms, it'd be better to have, I'd have a little bit more voltage headroom, if you know what I mean, if I had 50 ohms in the load. But eventually I had to lower the primary, take a couple of turns off the primary a little bit. I'm not sure whether that helped or not, but I think I might have been kind of running out of voltage on the Q3 collector. For Q3, I didn't use a 2N2222. I used a 2N3053 that Mike, Alpha Alpha 1 Tango Juliet, had sent to me in a care package. So thanks for that, Michael. Very, very useful. Nice transistor. And I had to put, because this thing is running Class A, all the stages so far are running Class A, I had to put quite a bit of current through Q3, actually a 224 milliamps. I experimented with how much current I was putting through. At the same time, I had to consider the effects of the input, the effects of the emitter, the effect that the emitter resistor would have on the input impedance. And so I went with 7.5 ohms in the emitter and a feedback resistor of 220 ohms. That low value of feedback from collector to the base reduced the gain quite a bit. And the driver stage gain is down to about 7.7 dB. The two preceding stages, the 2222 stages, each had, well, the first stage had 14 dB of gain, the second stage had 12 dB. But the driver was down at 7.7 dB. And I had some trouble keeping the driver from flat topping. I don't think I was running out of current. As I said, I think I was running out of voltage. I found that by playing with the values a little bit and by reducing the gain, by increasing the amount of feedback from collector to base, by reducing the gain there, I could keep it so that at the when I put the 0.1 volt input at the first stage, the 0.1 milliwatt input at the first stage, I could keep Q3 from flat topping at any point and keeping it all fairly linear. So anyway, by the time I got through Q3 had an output of the output of Q3 was up to, by the time I was coming out of Q3, I was at 240 milliwatts. Now for the final, obviously we can't go Class A here, so it's Class AB at this point. And I used an old transistor that was frequently used in CB rigs, the 2SC2075. Had a couple of them in the junk box. I used a really cool looking heatsink that I took out of an old computer. It's very, very substantial, and got it on there. And I used feedback on this stage also. I think that's kind of unusual. Very often when you look at these designs, it's kind of rare to see feedback being used in the final stage, but I decided to do it anyway. Heating, keeping in mind Doug Dumois's comments about unconditional stability, so I figured why not put some feedback there, even in the final. And so I put a bit of feedback there. The transformer, I had it set up so it would we would transform the 50 ohms of the load down to a very low 5 ohms at the collector. I think that's what I did. Yeah, I think. I didn't put notes on this part here, but it looks like I got about a 10-to-1 turns ratio there. And with the feedback, and for the biasing, the standard diode to ground to put the 0.6 volts or so on the base, and it worked. One thing I did notice is that when I first put this all together, I was building it stage by stage. It was built Manhattan style, and I have across one end of the little PC board that I used, kind of a rail with the 13.5 volts supply voltage on it. And you know, I didn't put much of a decoupling circuit on each stage. In other words, each stage, the transformer that was going to the collector just went to the collector of the transistor and up to the power supply rail. And I figured that if I needed to do more decoupling, I could go in there and put in some standard decoupling circuits, you know, a resistor and a couple caps to ground, or an RF choke and a couple of caps to ground. I did put 0.1 microfarad capacitor to ground from the supply voltage rail, so that provided some degree of decoupling and kept RF off of that rail. But when I got to the final, when I fired the thing up, I checked it out, and it looked like everything was working fine. There was a nice clean sine wave coming out at the appropriate power level. Nothing was getting tremendously or terribly hot, and everything seemed fine. But then when I cranked down the input voltage from the signal generator, the output signal got really squirrely. And that, of course, is a sign of instability somewhere in the circuit. So my first instinct was, I need to put some decoupling in the on that final. And so I took a 10 microhenry RF choke and put it between the transformer primary and the power supply rail, and I put a 0.1 microfarad cap in there too. And it was very satisfying, guys, because as soon as I put that decoupling in there, the squirreliness and the instability just instantly and disappeared. So it was a nice fix, and the thing is very stable now. One of the really educational parts of this whole project for me has been that Class AB amp, and this is where the interaction between LT Spice and the real world becomes a lot of fun. I know what goes on in a Class AB amp and how you're getting at the output pulses, like the top portion of the waveform goes through there. But when the input signal goes down into the negative range, the transistor is it doesn't conduct anymore, and so you get this kind of wave of the top portions, a train of the top portions of the signal at the output. But what was neat about it was, you know, I took the oscilloscope probe in LT Spice and put it there on the collector or even on the emitter resistor, and you see exactly the waveform that you'd expect. But then I would turn around, and right behind me is the workbench with the actual circuit, and I would fire it up, and I would put the oscilloscope at the same spots in the actual circuit and get an identical waveform on the real oscilloscope. So that was very, very satisfying. Also, what was interesting and fun was to watch what the low-pass filter did to that Class AB signal coming out of the amplifier. And you could see how that low-pass filter there plays such an important role in reforming or providing the rest of that waveform I guess you could look at it either as a filter action or a flywheel action there. But anyway, by the time he gets through the low pass filter at the 50 ohm load at the end, it's back to beautiful, clean sine wave form, and just a lot of fun. This is interesting. I had to, you know, when you use LT Spice, there's they have a pretty standard set of parts in there. They're not really the parts that we as QRP homebrewers use, although some of our parts are in there. In the software, the software comes with a 2N2222 because it's such a common transistor. But I did not have Spice models for the 2N3053 or for the 2SC2075. I did a lot of searching on the internet and was really kind of disappointed. It's not easy to find Spice models for even some of the more common transistors that we use. I was able, through some Googling, to find a good model for the 2N3053, but I could not find one for this very common transistor, the 2SC2075. So I went to the Yahoo groups. On Yahoo groups, there's an LT Spice group, and I put out a plea for help. I said, look, does anybody have a model for the 2SC2075? And a very nice guy named Gerhard in Germany came back and said that he did not have a model, but he was kind enough to take the transistor parameters from the data sheet and plug it in and build, essentially, a little LT Spice model for this transistor for me, which was really great, because all you do is you take the text of the model and you just copy it into the LT Spice schematic, and it appears there. And then when you tell LT Spice that your transistor is a 2SC2075, well, it acts like one. So thanks. I'm sure he's not listening, but thanks to Gerhard for that. And wow, thanks to Wes and the folks who put experimental methods together in the FBA program. It was really great to be able to predict what the what input impedance the various feedback resistor values would yield. And thanks again to Wes for all the advice over the years on this kind of stuff. And those emails that you sent us 2 years ago, Wes, are still being studied and used, at least here in Rome. So thanks a lot. By the way, I think one of the key emails that Wes sent to us 2 years ago is still up and posted on Mike's KL7R a website, which is very happily still active. Speaking about models, one thing I want to ask for as I wrap up this discussion of my amplifier chain. Just as I was doing this, I got an email from somebody asking if I had a good model for the NE602 chip. And Mike and I had one. Eric, KE6US, had cooked one up. And I don't think at that point I really knew how to use it. I think Mike did, but I didn't. And I've tried to find the emails from Eric. And I think Eric, the website that Eric was using back then, is down, and I can't find a new one. But Eric, if you're listening, if anybody knows Eric, or if anybody has an NE602 or SA612 or any of the models for that particular device, please send them my way, because we could certainly use them. All right, very good. So anyway, that's my technical adventure for the week. The next step, of course, is to put the amplifier chain in the kick panel transmitter cabinet and hook it up to the balance modulator. I did a little bit of that. I think it needs a little bit of tweaking, and I might need a diplexer between the balance modulator and the amps. Maybe not, but it looks like it's going to work well, and I should have at least 2 or 3 watts of of double sideband coming out of that same thing really soon. Once I get the transmitter squared away, I want to build a little direct conversion receiver to go in the same box, so I'll have a complete phone station for 80 meters on the in one little very, very homebrew cabinet. All right, let me switch back here. There we are. Okay. A couple other, let's see, I got a list of things to mention here in the news. Oh, here's something I want to ask about. I'm running out of bypass capacitors, and as you guys who are avid solder melters would know, this is a problem. I use lots and lots of 0.1 microfarad bypass caps. I had a big shipment from Dan Small Parts a while back, and I'm running out, and I have to get a new order off to Dan. But in the meantime, I want to ask for a bit of technical advice here. In his very generous care package that Michael AA1TJ sent to me, there was a nice box of not 0.1 microfarad caps, but 1 microfarad caps. What do you think about using these as bypass caps? Seems to me it would work out. They look fairly robust, so I don't think there'd be a problem with them blowing up or anything. Oh, by the way, I want to say I did release some smoke in the course of this amplifier project. At one point, I had to rig up a little heat sink for the driver because it got so much current through it. And at one point, the heat sink kind of drooped down and managed to put a full 12 volts directly across the emitter resistors, I think it was the two 15-ohm emitter resistors in the driver's circuit. And let me tell you, that will release some smoke. It was pretty spectacular. Billy thought it was really, I think it was the highlight of the whole project for him, seeing the smoke came out. It left a little burn mark on the PC board. It looked a lot worse than it really was. It was just two resistors got burned up. But anyway, so there was the third type of smoke that was being released. There was the coffee vapors, the solder smoke, and the smoke that got out of those two resistors. Hey, but I digress. Do you think I could use these 1 microfarad caps as bypass caps in projects? Michael sent me a real nice box of them, so I could be doing this for a while. Let me know if you think if you think that would be okay. Speaking of Dan Small Parts, there was an interesting exchange on QRPL. I like QRPL. It's a lot of good information, a lot of good guys on the list. Sometimes it drifts a little bit, but that's just the nature of things. Anyway, there was a discussion of Dan Small Parts, and it led to a discussion of the odors that you get when you open up the boxes that come from various different parts suppliers. This comes right on the heels of the discussion of the various aromas of the differing aromas of solder, of different kinds of smoke from different brands of solder. This was an area that was completely new to me. Steve Smith, who's got the very appropriate nickname Snort Rosin, was the one who alerted us to this. So anyway, this is a new area that we've been alerted to now. The odors that are emitted by part shipment from various suppliers, and whether the supplier is a smoker or a non-smoker, you know, I just got to say, we could get a little bit too picky here, guys. If we're not only do we want, I'm a non-smoker, but I think it's a little bit too much if we have to specify that the parts supplier be a non-smoker. I know sometimes on the eBay they point out that the rig was owned by a smoker or a non-smoker. Man, I just have to say, I think that's getting a little bit too demanding among the for the folks who are supplying us with radio parts. So I say, look, we hope that Dan will quit smoking, but if he doesn't, I still like him as a parts supplier. Okay. All right. Let's see. We took care of that issue. Let me see what else we got here. This is sort of in the same vein. I on the blog a while back, I put up a picture. You'll remember it if those of you who've been there. It's the picture of the alien image, the image of the aliens, the grays, the little oval-eyed guys, the extraterrestrials. A screw just fell out of my reading glasses here. Oh my gosh! Well, there's an opportunity for repair right there. All right. Anyway, somebody sent me a picture. What's going on is that these very creative guys in the Netherlands have taken a software designed radio, hooked it up to the internet, and they're providing online display of various segments of the, I think, 80, 40, and 20-meter ham bands. You can go there. You can multiple users at the same time can look at the output, the kind of waterfall output from the software-defined radio, and take a look at what these bands look like at any time. And you look across the entire band, you can see what signals there are. And some folks out there have figured out a way to make pictures appear on these displays. This might be in the don't have enough to do category, but it was creative anyway. And of course, these pictures don't contain any kind of call sign information. And I saw some email exchanges a while back indicating that some of these guys might be in the pirate category. So I thought that was interesting, but there is on the blog spot on the blog page a picture of some of the work of these I guess we'll call them electronic artists, some of whom may be pirates. We don't know. Let's see. Speaking of things extraterrestrial, I've been following them. So I'm sure many of you are the battery problems of the Mars rovers. One of them apparently is having some serious battery problems. It's related, I think, to dust that gets on the rover. Also, it may be I'm not sure, but they may be moving into winter in that part of Mars. And I remember in past winters, what they tried to do is park the thing at an angle so that the solar panels get enough energy. Well, let's hope that the rover gets through another winter there. It's been fun to watch these things. It's like the old Timex watches, takes a licking and keeps on ticking. So congratulations to everybody who worked on that. I just saw some brief mention of the astronauts up working out doing spacewalks on the space station, and I felt bad for them because apparently they lost a toolkit and it drifted away, and you know, I thought I lose tools. I lose tools just about every project, and I lose them amidst the rubble on my workbench. So I'm really sympathetic. It must be really difficult to work in that environment, and it must be very disheartening to watch your toolbox just drift away and have no way of getting it back. So good thing that they apparently had a spare set of tools, and they said that they were going to be real careful to prevent that one from drifting away. So good luck there with the repair on the space station. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the manned experimental propagation transmitters, or the QRSS beacons. Mine has been on, and it's picked up almost every day by the grabbers up there in Northern Europe, in Belgium and Denmark. It's kind of fun for me every once in a while to check and see my little 50 milliwatt signal making it over the Alps and showing up on the screen of Johann ON5EX and PA1, I think it's SDB. I'm sorry if I got the call wrong there. But there's been some unrest in the QRSS community. There's been some conflict and some disagreement, and apparently it has to do with guys who are using a more advanced version of this kind of transmission. The ones that we've been talking about and playing with are called visual MEPT. That is, they're designed to produce a recognizable, distinctive, visual image on the screen of the receiving station. In my case, the online grabbers. So I started out with just a real simple beacon signal that would produce the dots and dashes of Morse across the screen. But then a few episodes back, I switched to a frequency shift keying system that produces a more distinctive, more easily recognizable kind of square wave in which you could read the Morse by looking, in my case, along the bottom of the square wave. Other guys do much more advanced stuff. Johan was producing bicycles that went across the screen, and people. A lot of people produce their call sign in distinctive fonts. We've had all kinds of very creative displays there. But then there's another system called Whisper. Also, it was designed for QRPP, and it allows automatic receipt and automatic registry on the web of spots. So you fire this thing up, and if somebody at the other side of the world receives your signal, it automatically reports it to a kind of an internet reporting system, and you can see these really cool maps showing, you know, the path over which your signal probably traveled to be picked up by the reporting station, details about when it was received, signal levels, and all that. Excuse me, but interesting stuff. I'd be interested in doing it, but you need an SSB or at least a phone transmitter for the four whisper. You can't do it with just an ordinary kind of CW transmitter, which I have here. So I mean, my finals here are in class. No, I'm in class A. I guess I could. Maybe I could. I think you need all kinds of modulator circuitry in there. But anyway, I haven't been playing with Whisper, but I've been intrigued with it. But apparently, there's been some of the visual MEPT guys have been... Well, the allegation has been made that some of the Whisper guys are going beyond QRPP in an effort to get lots of spots. So we'll hope that Harmony returns to the QRSS, QRPP community, but... there has been a little bit of discussion about what the appropriate power levels are to use with these rigs. Some people are making it, making the long haul trip down to VK. W1BW has been picked up several times, I think, by the VK6DI grabber using just 10 milliwatts visual MEPT. And he's also been picked up in VK7, just at 10 milliwatts. And also WB3ANQ, his signals have been picked up and recorded on the grabbers down under, I think also at very similar power levels. So congratulations to both those guys. My signals have made it across the pond to Vernon's Big Ears grabber in Nova Scotia. I was very, very pleased with that. But so far, I have not made the trip to VK land. Hopefully, with a few more sunspots, we'll be able to do that. One other thing I put up on the website, very inspirational video by an Italian ham, IK0IXI. He's up in Civitavecchia, close by here to Rome. He's been active in the MEPT, QRSS world also. But this video is about a very fine business, homebrew, 8-band SSB rig that he built. Really, really fine workmanship. He's got a video up on YouTube. You really got to check it out. Very, very nice work. Congratulations to him. Really, really beautiful job. Let's see. I better get to the Solder Smoke mailbag here. A lot of mail came in. Hold on, we had a special request. It's going to be a double gong weekend. How exciting is that? You know, we've had the other, gong, but also just for old time's sakes, and those of you who had problems with the old gong probably want to cover your ears or pull out the earbuds now for a second, but I don't think that was too loud. That's the old gong. My kids have dug up the old gong. You'll recall it back in London, they used to occasionally steal it from me and it would show up in the kitchen, or I would trip over it when I got up in the morning and tried to get down through the hallway. Or anyway, the gong, the real gong is back, but I guess it's time to cue the digital gong.
It's time for
Sorry, Smoke Now Bag.
I love them.
Indeed.
Yeah, so that brings us to Solder Smoke Mailbag. First, thanks to everybody who offered to help get the CD for Mike's wife up to Alaska. We had a lot of people offered to help, and Alan out in Ohio was the first one to make the offer. And he's going to get the CD of all the Solder Smoke broadcasts to Jackie up in Juneau. Thanks a lot. Got an interesting email from Paul, WA1MAC. Actually got a couple of good emails from Paul. The first one, he talks about using chapstick containers, those little chapstick things where you turn the screw and the chapstick stuff comes out, using that for PTO core for oscillators. And you could see how you could use it. You just need something to be able to turn so that you could put the ferrite or other magnetic material into the coil to change its value, to change the frequency of the oscillator, etc. I thought that was pretty neat. And Paul, thanks for sharing that ideas with us. It reminded me of our discussions about the use of Desitin, the baby diaper lotion. For a heat sink compound. Mike and I were talking about that. Apparently, well, I've never used it, but maybe I did one time. But if you run out of heat sink compound and you have some Desitin around, you could use it. But then the rig emits this kind of nice, kind of oily, kind of kind of clean diaper odor. Not dirty diaper odor, of course, but the oh, man. But anyway, it gives kind of a nice familiar odor for those of us who've recently had small kids around. Got a really nice email from a very exotic location, and I hope I say his name right. Isaiah, A-I-S-E-A. Isaiah, his call sign is 3 Delta 2 Alpha Alpha, and he continues to listen from Fiji. And he's one of those really kind of far out there red dots on the cluster map screen. He has just retired. Congratulations to you. And asked about the flea transmitter that he's been hearing about. And we have that up on the Blogspot page. It's the flea. I think it's a design out of Catalonia in Spain. And Isaiah reports that he also has the soft rock kit, and he's going to be getting to work together, get to work on that. So thanks for the note from Fiji there, Isaiah. Bob NT7S has set up a Solder Smoke Facebook page. I suspect that some of us may be just beyond the Facebook age demographic. but it's up there. And take a look. We've had a number of people sign up. I'm signed up to it. And who knows? It could take off and become the next big thing here in the Solder Smoke world. We got a note, a plea for help from a Solder Smoke spouse, talking about some of the problems that come with our hobbies, some of the alleged problems, some things that people claim are problems, and we had an email exchange. I don't want to go into it here. I don't want to belabor the point, but the email exchange has been posted up on the blogspot.com. Page. It's been suggested to me that we're spending too much time talking about the malady, the Dilbert disease. You guys know what I'm talking about, and we don't want to turn this into kind of an internet version of some of the discussions that take place on 75 meters. You guys know what I mean. So we'll try not to use the K word for several episodes. You guys know what I'm talking about. And if you want to take a look at the advice that we gave to the concerned spouse, you could just go to the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Enough said. Steve, G0FUW, our man in Bath, reports that there'll be a second Bath build-a-thon on 17 January 2009. They're going to build the Tim Walford's Brendan DSB rig. Very fine business. Tim Walford in Somerset. Of course, the prolific creator of very fine business kits and the author and editor of the publication Hot Iron, very fine. And the second Bath Build-A-Thon, 17 January 2009. If you're in the UK, by all means, be there. Got a nice email from Mexico, from Roberto, XE1GXG. Roberto's getting married. Congratulations, Roberto. But he told us in his email about the day that he and his bride visited, went into Guadalajara to buy the wedding ring. This is an important day, an important mission, and Roberto was there taking care of this very important task. But he said that on the way there or on the way back, he discovered that the place that they were going was close to the equivalent of Guadalajara's Radio Row. Lots and lots of stores with electronic parts and equipment and everything else. And instead of just focusing on that day's very important activity, Roberto decided that it would be a good time also to see if he could go out and buy some 0.1 microfarad bypass capacitors. Roberto, buddy, this is a sign that you're a victim of the disease that we just mentioned. And believe me, whenever you get married, those kind of digressions, you'll learn that they're probably not a good idea. That's probably good to separate these kind of activities. Anyway, good luck with the upcoming wedding, and thanks for the note. Hey, I got a really nice email, a blast from the past from me, from Ben, November 1, Victor Foxtrot. Ben, I remembered his name instantly when I saw it. Ben Gelb sent me a nice email, and I remembered him because when we were back in Virginia, and we've been gone for a while, about 10 years ago, when we were living in Virginia, and I was a member of the Vienna Wireless Society in Vienna, Virginia, and we had one little kid who was the only little kid that we had in the club. When I was a little kid, we had several little kids in my radio club, but we only had one little kid in our radio club, and he was Ben, and I guess he must have been about 10 or 12 at the time, and he faithfully came to the radio club meetings, and he met us on the air club sessions, and I talked to him on the HT, and we did experiments with voice over the internet, and it was just great to have a really young kid involved in radio with us. And I think I've heard from him once or twice over the years, but it's been a long time. And he stumbled across Solder Smoke, and I think it was because of our discussions in the last episode of the Software Defined Radio. Anyway, it looks like Ben has really done great things. He's now, it looks to me from the email that he's doing graduate work at MIT, and he's preparing to design things for a living. And he sent me links to some of the projects that he's been working on, including launching some balloons from the Boston area and tracking them with ham radio gear and GPS and all that. I'm going to try to post some of his pages up onto the web. So great to hear from you, Ben, and good luck. Keep in touch. Let's see. Well, yeah. Steve, we mentioned a little bit earlier, Steve Snort Rodson Smith. He was the one who asked for the return of the real gong. So if any of you were disturbed or had your hearing damaged by that little audio blast from the past, blame it on Steve. I was just doing what was asked by the listeners. Steve, as I said earlier, is the one who alerted us to the opportunity to become a solder smoke kind of aroma connoisseur. Steve is definitely the first. And I got to laugh because when somebody was describing a project they were working on, he kind of chimed in and said, what brand of solder were you using? he also used a phrase that made me laugh. On the soldersmoke.blogspot page, we have I put up a picture. It's of Victor Kilo 3 Alpha Juliet Golf's homebrew SSB rig. He homebrewed this thing, and it's all spread out on the table, and it's all held together by clip leads, and it just reminded me of a number of projects that I've been involved in where you make those kind of, you get the thing on the air even before it's in the cabinet. And Steve, obviously resonated with him also because he sent in a phrase and he said, ah, yes, once upon a clip lead. Thanks for that, Steve. Let's see what else we have here. We mentioned John's rig. Steve, KG6NRM, reports that he's hooked on solder smoke and home brewing. He's working on the TAC 40 project, which is makes use of a pick chip. All right. Paul, thanks for that message, Steve, and good luck with the TAC 40 project. Paul, WA1MAC, sends me a message that at first I thought might be a little bit problematic because, you know, we have a very strict rule against any form of political discussion here on Solder Smoke, and we're going to stick with it. We're going to stick with that rule. But Paul says that he's discovered something, and I don't think we can really say this has any real political connotations. It's more of a recycling thing. But all those signs that have been on front lawns from coast to coast in the United States, Paul has discovered a ham radio used for them. He says that they're mostly made of a material called coroplast, and that they're very useful, I guess, for cabinets or for bases. He says you could cut them up quite easily. Anyway, take a look. Some of you guys might be able to make use of those political signs, and I'm sure that they work equally well no matter what party the signs were from. So don't this is a completely nonpartisan endorsement. Make use of those signs, and thanks to Paul for making that suggestion. Paul also gets into the politically incorrect, but he tells us that, you know, there's ugly construction, there's Manhattan construction, there's dead bug construction. He uses a Blair circular hole cutter to cut holes in the PC board, and then he uses those as the isolation pad islands. And he calls this technique New England bugly construction, with a B. New England bugly construction. And I'm not going to tell you what the B's for, but use your imagination. Gentlemen, that brings us to the end of this week's Solder Smoke Mailbag. Thanks for all who wrote in. Sorry if I missed anybody. We'll try to catch you next week. No, there's more mail. Our friend Roger Hayward sent me a very nice picture of the two little harmonics that we heard from several episodes back. They're really beautiful. Thanks for the picture, Roger, and good luck with the cristalinos, as the Portuguese, we call kids harmonics. The Portuguese would call the kids little crystals. I think that's very nice. So thanks for the beautiful picture, and I'm sure Grandpa Wes is having a good time with the little ones also. William, let's see, I got a nice card here from Hagerstown. let's see. Yeah, from Hagerstown, Maryland to N3HQB. William Wentz sends me a nice, very nice QSL card, and also sends me something that we could use from little mini Baybel cheeses, something that I could use as a screen to prevent the popping sound from making it through to the microphone. Let's give it a test here. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. I don't think a single popping sound made it through there, William. So thanks very much for sending that along. Appreciate it. I meant to mention this. I think we're a little bit over time. But hey, the literature of the week, let me mention it. This week's, what's issue here? Discover Magazine, December 2008. It's got a picture of Stephen Hawking. I really like Discover Magazine. It seems to be getting better and better. Anyway, this is the cover with the one with Stephen Hawking on it. Get this one because it's got an article called The 50 Best Brains in Science, but it's got a section called The Outsiders, and they all seem to be kind of people like us, who, you know, kind of just amateur scientists, amateur technologists, people who have done great things. They feature a lot of people we know. John Canzius of Erie, Pennsylvania, the guy we talked about not long ago, who worked on a cure for cancer using RF, and they've got a great picture of him there with a ham rig and an oscilloscope in his lab, so he's there. Forrest Mims. You remember Forrest Mims, the great author who produced all those little books in Radio Shack and many, many other books? His story is in there. Many other people like this who are kind of amateur technologists. I also like this magazine because there are a number of people in there who I've had the good fortune of meeting. And there's a discussion. Michael Griffin here, administrator of NASA, is in there. I had a chance to meet Mike when I was working at the embassy in London. Great guy and a radio amateur. He's in there. And I also got to meet Dr. Hawking. So anyway, this issue was particularly good. That's our Solder Smoke reading recommendation for the week. All right. Covered a lot of ground, I guess, because we were a week behind. Thanks to everybody who's written in. Please keep sending us those emails. Let me know what you think about my amplifier design. Give me a little while, and later in the day I'll try to post an updated version of the spice file and the schematic up there so you guys can take a look. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving week is upon us. All those in the United States, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Eat a lot of turkey and have a wonderful holiday. 7-3 to all from Rome.